The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is hour number two of a numbers game from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin with us on the desk. Kelly going to make it a whole show without talking NBA today, but that's what we have tomorrow for, Kelly.
That's right. We got a lot going on tomorrow. By the way, we're in these. We're in the bar stools that you and I are very used to over here at the D. I think I've got one of those that someone's been. It's been sat in about 1,000 times more than others. So I feel like I'm way lower today than usual.
Well, that is you're paying homage to our old setup where the vintage South Point studio chairs have gone up and down and up. And
exactly. You know,
some things never change, no matter the venue that we are at. We will have NFL draft talk coming up in a little bit. Also, Kelly's breakdown of the Mexico Open. Our best bets for tonight. If you missed any of our college basketball plays in hour one, we'll rehash those. And right now, to continue the college basketball discussion, also get some Champions League talk. He was burning the midnight oil late last night. Was watching him doing studio on that St. Mary's San Francisco game that went right down to the wire. It's our pal Dallin Cuff from ESPN who joins us right now. Pretty crazy day yesterday down in the college basketball world. What did you make of the UConn going down there? What do you think about their chances now going forward? Seems like people want to say, what's wrong with the Huskies? But they are still your favorites here at 5-1 to win it all.
Man, recency bias on full display here because around Saturday, around 5 o'clock Eastern time, UConn was the greatest team that's ever been created, guys. So let's not forget, they did just thrash Marquette. They're still really good. It was a kind of a must-bet Creighton situation, and we talked about it yesterday on ESPN Bet Live. Just like, obviously, everybody was on UConn. You're going on the road. Creighton's a team that we thought they were the two best teams in the conference coming into the season. And Creighton has been a little more up and down for various reasons and some matchup problems they've had in certain games, but they're still really good and capable. They made 14 threes. They're going to beat almost anybody in the country. And that's what UConn didn't do. They didn't limit their three-point shots. They're able to break down the Blue Jays, get in the middle of their defense and kick out for good looks. And UConn just wasn't as locked in defensively and as good on the ball in terms of guarding their yard and keeping them out of the lane as they have been throughout the season. So no, I'm not worried about them at all. UConn is still the best team in the country. They are still, I rarely ever think the favorite is the best bet to win the national championship. But if you're going to make a bet before you see the bracket come out, UConn would be the bet, not because of value, obviously, because they're the favorite, but still, I think it's probably 5.5 to 1, 6 to 1. They have it all. They can win games in every different type of way. And last night, they ran into a really good team on the road that beat them up.
Sure, still going to be a really good game-to-game bet, I would think, Dallin, as we get into the NCAA tournament. Team that they beat last year to end their season, and a team who now has the longest active winning streak in college basketball. Team you were watching last night in St. Mary's. It's a weird season where there are definitely some of the mid-major-type teams that have what it takes to make deeper runs with how there's a lot more up in the air here once you get past the likes of UConn at the top here. What do you make of St. Mary's ability to make a second weekend or Final Four run, a team that's in that double-digit range to even make the Final Four at this point? But again, team, it's clicking on all cylinders right now.
They're good, but guys, there's no shot I think they're making the Final Four. I do not think that's a good bet, and just because of how they play. They're one of the slowest tempos in the country, which creates a small margin of error. They are talented, but not uber talented. Aiden Mahaney's good. Mitchell Saxon provides an inside presence. Joshua Jefferson getting fully healthy is really important for that team, so he missed last night's game. They have balance. They have a number of guys that can hurt you different ways. They really defend. But that WCC is not what it was even 2 years ago, with Gonzaga being one of the lead teams in the country. San Fran was better that year, made a tournament. Obviously, St. Mary's. The league was a little better. So they're 13 and not poo-pooing winning 13 games in a row in any way and winning in the kennel like they did last month. That's all great stuff. But really, their upside to me remains somewhat limited relative to a Final Four. Maybe get out of the second weekend, sure. The matchups are really important. But like I said, when you play that slow of a tempo and you're going to have a small margin of error no matter what, that makes it really hard to win games against really good teams that possibly could push you out of your comfort zone, pressure some of those guards, and make it a little more challenging, which we've seen in the non-conference. That same team did struggle.
Yep, such a good point. Style does matter. And thinking about that San Francisco team that used to be, with Todd Golden, was a 10 seed a couple of years ago and had a couple of really good teams. Yep. Well, Todd Golden is now in Gainesville, and you talk about style. It's a fascinating matchup tonight because it's our highest total on the board. Florida goes to Alabama, two teams that are almost carbon copies of each other. They both play really fast. They're both very good on offense. Defense can sometimes be optional. What do you make of a line that's right now Alabama -8.5 at home against the Gators?
It's funny, guys, because whenever I – like, those are the games when you see them coming up yesterday before the lines come out. I'm just like, what is the total on this game today? Like, how high are we going to go? And I believe I saw – I think I saw 174 this morning. You tell me if it's any different.
It is, yeah.
But that's – it's not surprising at all where it is given how these teams can score. And Alabama is a little better defensively. The pace of this game is just going to be bonkers. And my challenge with Florida, I think Florida's really good, and they finally, their numbers have reflected that. They've gotten a couple wins. They were one of those teams a month ago, honestly. I was like, man, and I love Todd. I've known Todd since he was the volunteer assistant at Columbia back 2011, I guess. And really good coach and a young mind, but his team had not gotten some of the big wins they needed to get. They had not performed in some critical moments when they needed to. Even having that loss against Kentucky at home back in the beginning of league play would have been a critical win for that team. That said, they've started to get those wins. The bigs have gotten a lot better. I think Riley Kugel kind of understanding his role is really important and not trying to do too much. Zion Pullen and Walter Clayton are more the guards that make that team go. And Riley's got, he's taken a little bit more of a, not a backseat, just understanding his role a little bit more. It's been really critical for this team. That said, they could get blown out in this game. This game has a massive variance to me. I think it's either a one possession game or they lose by 20 or 15. That's what makes it hard to bet. This is a situation. If I see the pace early on, I might wade into the total, which I've done a number of these SEC games. Just given Alabama and Auburn are playing, it's like I want to get a feel for how the game is going to go and then try to fire at that situation.
Yep, no question. I laid it with Alabama thinking the latter is much more likely to happen, but totally understand that with the high variance there. Alabama minus 8.5 right now, 174 your total. As Dallin Cuff from ESPN joins us right now, outstanding college basketball analyst. We'll also talk some Champions League here in a second. One other game that's really the marquee matchup of the night in the mid-major ranks, Colorado State goes to New Mexico and the Pitt, two really good Mountain West teams. That's been a great league, projected to get six bids in. And New Mexico is now out to 7-point favorites at a lot of books down. How do you see this one playing out?
Ooh, that's tough. I like New Mexico's team. And I think out of the Mountain West teams, I think they may be best suited to win some games in the tournament just because of how they play. They play an up-tempo style. They turn you over. A lot of different guys can score. Denton Day is really an electric guard. I'm looking for teams in that league that don't have to grind it and don't have to play it slow, which majority of them do that are really good in that league. And that's what I think is different about them. Them playing the Pitt is really tough. That said, UNLV beat them there. They've had some losses there. If that number keeps creeping up, I don't like to always go against the numbers, but I would lean toward taking the points and thinking that game could be a little bit closer. Colorado State has had some issues on the road. But it's a game that ultimately is going to come down to who can get defensive stops and who can string those stops together. And I would lean on New Mexico, obviously, to win the game. But I think they keep you within the number if it gets up to 7. But that's another one, too, that a lot of those Mountain West games have been weird, especially when you got road teams that have played. Teams that you have great home advantages have not represented that against some of the best teams consistently throughout the course of the season.
Sure. A couple 8-5 teams there in the Mountain West doing battle at the Pit tonight. One more college hoops will throw at you down, then go to the soccer. Duke on the road at Miami tonight, where the Canes have just completely fallen apart here over the past month. Duke is laying about 5 on the road. What do you make of this Duke team, especially going through a subpar ACC slate, at least compared to past seasons?
Guys, yeah, Miami may be the most disappointing team in the country. I was so high on them coming into this year. Wuga Poplar he still could be a lottery pick. I mean, North Shadow Mir, a really challenging big to guard that's physical, that provides a presence, and he's started to make, shoot the ball, which I thought was a good thing, but he's fallen in love at times with showing that he can make threes, which is not a good thing. They lack toughness, they lack connectivity. Jim Larranaga is a great coach. He doesn't seem to be able to reach these guys right now. All that said, seems like a great spot to take 6.5 at home. So that's what I just saw in my book was 6.5. So I'm sitting here like, are they going to do it? Guys, they burned me all year. When I faded them, they cover. When I take them, they hose me. I'm talking like 0-7. I hate them. So if you're listening to this, maybe you're probably like, give me Duke. But this again, this time, it's like I'm obsessed with the talent. I just keep seeing the talent. And I see Duke, and I understand Duke has had some struggles on the road. They're still a team that's trying. Their kids still trying to gel. They just need to get fully healthy. I still haven't gotten word. Maybe you guys know. I was going to try to talk to people close to the game. If Proctor's healthy, if he is, how's he looked, in practice or shoot around? Because that team, obviously, how they played the weekend, Duke, without Proctor was no problem. You still want NBA talent on your roster and ready to go. And he needs to want a guard on both ends. And if he plays, I'm not sure. It was a addition by subtraction this weekend. I don't know if it's always the case. We'll kind of wait and see. I would like to see that team get fully coalesced, healthy, and gel and be able to play together. But you're going to give me 6.5 at home. Miami's home crowd was great last year. It's good when Carolina and Duke come to town. Carolina, they got a push. That was one of my hoses because I cooked Carolina -3. They ended up pushing that game against all odds, which hurt. So I guess it's not 0-7. I got a push there, but it's not what I wanted. in terms of this game, I think I'm going to take the 6.5. I think we're going to continue to just have the Hurricanes break my heart because I'm just obsessed with the talent, and they are at home, and their crowd will at least be there for Duke.
Yeah, Duke opened 5.5. They're up to 6.5. A couple books have even shaded towards 7 now. A lot of movement there toward the Blue Devils tonight. Dallin Cuff joins us right now. Talking college hoops and some soccer.
Is Miami fully healthy, though, too? Is one question now, too. I just can we figure that out.
A team that's lost 3 of 4 lost 4 straight, 3 of those 4 games coming on the road. We have 2 Champions League matchups here today. Down Barcelona goes to Napoli, and then Arsenal, who's been red hot at Porto today in the Champions League. These are first of second leg aggregate score lines here in the round of 16. Down, what are you looking at today in the Champions League?
Guys, I say this with full bias. I'm an Arsenal fan, been it for almost 20 years now. I've been waiting 7 years to hear the champions will be on the field in a knockout league game, knockout round game. Like, I am amped. I took off my Sirius show this afternoon purely to watch this game. And I can't imbibe because we'll be on TV tonight, but we'll be locked into the game. That said, the play from a non-biased perspective is Porto double the chance. They're plus 125 to win or draw and at home, and they are a good team. And that building is going to be on fire. They've got good young talent. And I don't think they're coming in with any fear of an Arsenal team that I think is very good. It should be the team that gets through this tie. But, for them to walk away with the result and at least get a draw at home, I don't think that's far-fetched at all, especially the way Arsenal's played great the last 2 games, 11 combined goals. They finally look like they've opened something up offensively, not so reliant on Saka and Martinelli to create from the outside. That said, this team has never played in a Champions League knockout round game. They're inexperienced in the title run showed last year. Experience, and you talk to all these guys I work with in the NCFC shows, title run, I mean, experience matters, especially in Champions League games. They don't really have it. So I'm a little concerned. So Porto, plus 125, winner draw to play there.
And it's first of 2 legs, so it's not like the tie's over, just if Arsenal draws or goes down 1-0. Dallin Cuff, thanks so much, man, for joining us. We always appreciate your insights.
Anytime, guys. Also, Leyland Lumber, Napoli progressing past Barcelona.
Napoli over Barca. There we go. That's another one here on a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, we look at some college basketball futures odds with our pal Tyler Shoemaker, who actually does not have UConn ranked number 1 in his overall power ratings. That'll probably trigger some folks. Interesting to see where Tyler wants to go, because he's got some futures long shots that he likes. And you can get more expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. We hit it on it at the end with Dallin Cuff, and a big thanks again for joining us in Dallin. But Champions League today, it's again first of 2 legs, Kelly, and people sometimes get confused by this where a lot of times, especially the big favorites, are not necessarily auto bet against in these first legs, but when it's a big favorite, say like an Arsenal who's on the road against that desperate team like a Porto, who's a much more defensive minded team. They're not a team that's super flashy. They're going to try to play a physical kind of lock you down style in the midfield. Those can be good bets either to the under or to like Down was talking about that double chance, either win or draw at plus money, where the tie isn't over. Like Arsenal is fine if this game ends 0-0. Hell, even if Arsenal's down 1-0 going to the second leg and they go back home to London and the Emirates, they feel pretty good about their chances. So that's the one thing to keep in mind here. These are 2-leg ties, and they also got rid of the away goals rule as well. So it's not like if you're a road team in leg 1, you have to come out and put a beating down or else you're behind the 8-ball in leg number 2. That's just something to keep in mind here on these bets.
Yeah, is that that's typically a rule of thumb, right? Unders on that first leg look more.
Yeah, it's 2.5 under minus 120. That's the one thing I would play because, Arsenal, last 5 games, 21-2 on aggregate. I mean, they've been amazing. They've rocketed up the Premier League board. They beat Liverpool 3-1. Porto is not a team that's really scored much. They average about 2.4 goals per game in league play. And you're talking a league that's not very good as well. There's really only 4 good teams in that Portuguese league. And Porto's been the 3rd of those 4 viewed as top European teams this year, Kelly. So that's where I look at the spot here for Porto. You probably see this played very, very close to the vest. Thinking 1-0, 1-1 type of game there today. That's how I look at that one. Hard for me to know what to do with Barcelona.
Anything
and
you bet, by the way?
No, I did not
let
bet
pump
these.
The brakes real quick. Ben Wilson, for everything that he does at VSiN, this is a guy who also, what are you doing right now? G League Ignite you're calling for. You're doing college baseball stuff. And then whenever I walk by this guy when he's not actually doing anything, he's sitting rewatching soccer games that he missed from the morning before.
No, I'll tell you, I'm doing a lot. I can't watch all the games.
Man, you're grinding always.
Sitting up late watching Dortmund PSV last night while we were prepping for the show. Yeah. College basketball too. Obviously got a lot of games there. But yeah, the Champions League's great because I actually have time to watch these. Teams, because it's midweek. I'm just doing prep for other things. If there is one, I would bet it would be the under 2.5 in Arsenal Porto leg one, which is sort of a correlated way of what Dallin was talking about. Yeah. His bet liking Porto. What comes up has to come down. I mean, Arsenal's just has been by far the best team in Europe scoring over their last five, but that is in the league that they are very comfortable in playing right now. Now you go on the road, tough environment there in Portugal. The other matchups, Barcelona and Napoli. Napoli is the underdog. Dallin likes Napoli to advance, which is plus 150 overall. I think a lot of that, Kelly, is because Barcelona this year has not so secretly been really, really shaky, but they've been the beneficiaries of a whole lot of late magic. If you take out the goals that they've scored in the 90th minute or later, which are basically, your last second goals here in soccer, they would be ninth in La Liga. I mean, they've really not been that good this year. And partly it's because of the defense. They're 10th in goals allowed in La Liga this year. The issue is Napoli is in terrible offensive form right now. They've scored two or more goals once in the last five. So it's hard for me to really fall in love with Napoli. But at the number, I get why Dallin is on board with the Italian team there. Napoli's just been a very mediocre Italian team this year, ninth in Serie A. This is really their Super Bowl-type matchup here to try to get into the final eight of the Champions League knockout.
Okay, interesting. I might be fine. I might play a couple low-scoring exact results on that.
Okay.
Arsenal. Got to mix it up, a little Champions League middle of the afternoon. I love it. I love it on the West Coast. We're just right in the middle of the afternoon for us out here.
Little 1-1 or 1-0 exact.
Right, something like that.
I think something like that. I'm behind that with you. Behind that with you for sure on the Champions League as well. We also have other things to talk about here too, because NFL mock draft season is upon us, Kelly. It's funny. I like that we want to have stuff to actually actionably bet on today, because really, as far as NFL goes, for the next 2 months, it's going to be this mock came out and that mock came out, and now the odds are shifting this way.
Oh, I love it.
And who really knows anything? And we're still 2 weeks away from the combine. So at least for me on the timing, I never make any NFL draft bets till post combine. And that's a lot of times where you see things start to shake out. But as you were seeing yesterday, Kelly, Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com, he just came out with his second mock draft. Lance Zierlein, who's also had very good numbers in the past as far as how accurate these guys are in their mocks. Both guys top 20 over the last 5 years or so combined. They've each come out with mocks early on, and Jeremiah's as at least interesting is he's not assuming any trades are made. These are kind of just bare bones selections based on what he's heard from different NFL teams, where he has shocker Caleb Williams going number one. But it's after that I know caught your attention there as to what he thinks on the mock.
Yeah, this is it is interesting, because I do want to preface this with Jeremiah doesn't, and I appreciate this. I don't like any of the mocks that mock trades, because it always turns into six different trades, and it's okay. Well, we could all kind of play this fantasy game.
They get out of control really quick,
right? Exactly, yeah. They get out of control quickly, because realistically, if you do have a trade going on, probably it would get out of control if that actually happened. It's just hard to predict where that first trade occurs at, really. The one thing he did preface in his article, though, is that he has it set this way, where it is Caleb Williams 1, Drake May 2, Marvin Harrison Jr., then 3 to the Patriots. He has it this way, though, because he thinks that the Patriots will be in the market for one of the veteran quarterbacks. So that was... it is kind of, he's not mocking trades, but he is kind of not mocking trades in the draft, but he is kind of mocking a free agent signing or a trade, if you will, in the offseason here for New England. So I think that is important to keep in mind, because this is a switch from his 1.0. It came out, a week and a half ago, where he did have three quarterbacks right in a row, Jaden Daniels being two, actually, there, I believe, and Drake May was third to the New England Patriots. So I think it's interesting. This is obviously, it's all information when we talk NFL draft betting, and you want to keep your eyes on these guys, especially some of the top guys. Like you mentioned, Ben, there are guys that get this stuff better than others and are more tapped in with some of these teams. The Marvin Harrison Jr. stuff is really, really interesting to me. That is the closest bet I'm going to be get to making here first is
third overall.
No. It's him fourth overall. It's the fourth overall or to the Cardinals. I do think it's going to end up being three quarterbacks off the top. I don't see Jaden Daniels falling. I think his when we get to pro days and combine stuff, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him, because I think people are going to freak out over the weight and stuff like, you know, weight and height. And okay, he's a smaller quarterback who runs a lot. Are we going to be scared about that? But then, like, he's going to run like a 4.440. And I mean, we've talked all year about he was one of the best deep ball throwers in all of college football. Like, I think that's going to be too overwhelming, or should be. I think he's going to land. I think he's going to land in the top three. And I'm more unsure about Drake May, to be honest, from what I've seen.
The thing that really stands out to me so far is how that number two odds pick right now, May's minus 140. You got to think, as we get closer to the draft, that thing will go back and forth a ton.
Yeah.
And you look at a lot of the mocks right now, it's pretty much split. A lot of them have Daniels number two, May 3rd. Some of the other ones are flipped. I mentioned Zierlein. He has Daniels 2. Harrison Jr. also going 3. He actually has May slipping to 5 in that, Kelly.
Wow, okay.
And that's based on his – now, granted, all these mocks are kind of done from a different web. And Lance Zierlein, who has been a very good mock drafter over the years, he comes out and says in his first one, I'm going personal opinions early. What I think teams should do, I'm going to wait as I get later on, as I get more intel from teams. That's how I'll adjust. So don't put a whole lot of stock into that. That's just personal opinion. But there are a lot of teams, I imagine, just like him, who are very good draft evaluators, who will look at Jaden Daniels through this process and go, yeah, he probably should be a guy that at the very least goes top three. And right now, Daniels plus 120 to be second overall behind May.
Yeah, I know. I know Gil's excited about the possibility of that. And that is, yeah, for these ones that are posted right now, if I had to bet something, it would be Daniels number two.
Interesting.
I think he ends up going second. Drake May does fall back to that third spot. But I mean,
how much of that dives into the whole element of, all right, Washington had this North Carolina guy in Sam Howell. Drake May, you know, on the surface, looks like a very similar guy to that. It hasn't really worked with Howell. There's a regime change. Is that baked into your thought at all?
I would like to think that that's not what, you know, something that people are thinking about too much.
You also can't help yourself.
But though, you also can't help yourself, right? Like, it's got to be in the back of your mind a little bit too. I also think it is, you know, I think part of what makes Justin Fields so tough and evaluating him so tough is you're always going to have an easier time when you have a guy who has the legs like Jaden Daniels or Justin Fields kind of working your way into the NFL, right? Where you can at least be a weapon on the ground right away. If that passing game needs time to develop, at least that guy can take off and run whatever he wants.
You hear, by the way, Justin Fields not following the Bears on Instagram anymore.
I know. Shocker.
Breaking news that was probably inevitable. The breakup, sad. You hate to see it. We still to come on the numbers game. Our best bets on the college basketball cards. And also, Kelly Bidlin breaks down the Mexico Open when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our daily best bet emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. Visit VSiN.com/pro to subscribe today. That is VSIN.com/pro. We still have Kelly Bidlin's Mexico Open breakdowns. We'll run through our best bets in the college basketball card for tonight, but we have yet to talk NHL today on the show, and that's where our pal Jonathan Davis comes in, who joins us right now, host of Ice Cap on Sirius XM NHL and the Show Me the Money Hockey Betting Podcast. Great to have JD back here on a numbers game. And is it just me, or has this last couple months stretch here been all about the streaks in hockey? And you get teams like Florida now at the top of the Eastern Conference, another team right alongside of them here in the East. After Florida's won 6 straight, the Rangers all of a sudden have won 8 straight, right on the heels of Edmonton setting a record with a longest regular season win streak we've ever seen. Like, what's gotten into these teams here this year?
Well, yeah, streaking is definitely the theme in the NHL. And look, for, you know, the New York Rangers have finally, it seems like they have found their way. The Florida Panthers have been one of the best stories of the NHL this year, surviving injuries early on. And to me, the team that I would play, you know, long shot or if I'm going to make a futures bet for an Eastern Conference team to reach the final, it is the Florida Panthers. And yeah, ever since the coaching change in Edmonton, they have been a much different team.
Yeah, we're looking right now, Florida now 4-1, technically on the odds board here. Favorites just a slight shade ahead of Boston to come out of the East, while Edmonton is your favorites there in the West. And that leads us into our best game on the card tonight, where Boston goes to Edmonton. You know, not all that often where you're getting Boston as a significant underdog, but they are in the matchup tonight. Edmonton finally coming back to earth after that super long win streak. What do you make of the spot there for both teams?
You know, it's a spot that Boston has done well in. You know, they've won three straight and they've won four or five at Edmonton. It's hard to go against Edmonton, who's, I think they're 16-6 as a home betting favorite this year. I'm looking at the under because the under has been traditionally the play in this game. The under's hitting three straight. It's hitting 7 of 9 overall. It's cashed. I think it's also cashed 5 straight in Edmonton. And so for me, I'm looking at under 6.5 in this one. It's tough with the Oilers offense to go under, but for some reason, guys, it's low scoring games when these two teams meet.
And sitting right now on the odds board as we update our screen, -148 on Edmonton. A little bit of play to the underdog Bruins there. You can find them +124, 6.5 that total. Shaded a little bit to the under as well. You know, we talk teams also, JD, now that we're into this kind of home stretch of the year, about 25 games left for a lot of teams before the playoffs get underway. And with those two wild card bursts up for grabs, if we start in the East, as much as we can like Florida, who is a short number now, 4-1 to win the Eastern Conference, the two teams right now are, at least in the Lightning's case, the team that has a whole lot of postseason experience. Red Wings were a great story early. Those would be your two wild card spots right now. If you're looking further down the board, teams that are either on the bubble or on the outside looking in, if we start Eastern Conference, who would be a team that could very easily, in your eye, catch fire and be a sexy pick to make a run come postseason time?
If New Jersey can get themselves a goalie, then they've got a shot. But right now, you know, Tampa's a team that I always say never bet against the Lightning with all the experience they have, but they're just not the same team. You know, we just saw them lose 9-2 over the weekend to Florida. They lost to Ottawa 4-2. I think, you know, Tampa has, you know, given up so much draft capital over the years to get them cups, and it's worth it. I will always trade guys prospects for parades any day. But if I'm looking at a long shot in the East, only if New Jersey can find their way to get them improve their goaltending situation would I look at a team like the Devils.
Yeah, 14-1 right now the Devils are to win the East. Jonathan Davis joins us right now on the Numbers Game. Follow him at West Coast Hockey HKY as we're talking all things NHL. You go to the West and it's sort of like the case of two teams who have been in great form for the most part this year, all of a sudden hitting a bit of a rough patch now coming out of the All-Star break. Stars, who lead their division, have lost three straight. Same goes for the Canucks, who were a great early story out of the Pacific. If you're gauging any sort of concern level in those two teams, who would be higher in your eyes right now?
Maybe Vancouver. I mean, the Canucks schedule, guys, coming out of the All-Star break, it's brutal. I mean, they've got 17 teams after the All-Star break that were in playoff contention, and that was most out of really any team in the Pacific Division. You know, the other thing with Vancouver people are talking about is that they had guys that were playing above their heads from a shooting percentage standpoint in the NHL. You had about 6 guys that were shooting at 20%. That's extremely high for the NHL. So there was going to be some market correction. You know, they're in a rough stretch right now. And last night, you know, for me, that was my best bet of the night was Colorado, because Vancouver had that dreaded back-to-back going into Colorado, you know, with no rest, whether it's the team going to play the Nuggets in the NBA or the Avalanche in the NHL, you don't want that. So, you know, I wasn't surprised about what happened last night. They played, you know, they played some tough teams, so I could see them dropping off. To me, Dallas is still one of the class teams in the conference. I think that they will make a trade before the deadline. I wouldn't be too concerned about the Dallas Stars.
And a couple teams right now who are at the top of their respective standings. I've noticed the in-season points odds right now, which a lot of books are offering. You can look at those at DraftKings. It's like 108.5 right now on in-season points for a Vancouver team. They do lead everybody. They have 80 points right now. But you talk about just the strength of schedule now going forward. Are those markets you look at it all now that we're here coming down the home stretch? You have a little bit more shorter window to look at with 25 games left.
I haven't, but now you're intriguing me to do so. I'll have to crunch some numbers on that one. Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of points that Vancouver would need to hit that number. So I'll have to do a little research before I move further. But I do like that. I hadn't thought about that one.
109.5, I should say, Vancouver at right now. Again, that would only, you're 80, as you say. You'd need 30 points there from your final 25 or so games there going forward. As far as the rest of the card here for tonight, we talk about some of these teams in the Eastern Conference. You didn't mention Toronto, who's had sort of an up-and-down year, but still find themselves in pretty good playoff positioning going on at least right now. But they go on the road tonight. Too much of a price to lay. Seems like that's what the better side is. They're getting steamed against tonight on the road against Arizona from -220 down to -180.
Yeah, it is a big price. But for me, look, the best play in this game is Austin Matthews, anytime goal at -135. He returns home to Arizona. He's got a chance to hit the 50 mark tonight. So for me, that would be my number one play in the game. And if you want some plus money, like, I think Austin Matthews is just going to shoot and shoot more. You can get over 1.5 points at +134. If you do want to grab the Leafs, look, there's two ways that you can approach it. You can take the Leafs in regulation at -120. Arizona's a bad hockey team right now. Now, you're talking about that line now shifting to -180. Guys, since the calendar flipped to 2024, teams on the closing line favored between -175 and -200. If my memory serves me correct, they're 11-2 on the money line, and they're 10-3 on the puck line. So now Toronto's getting into that sweet spot for me. But so I would look at them. But for me, yeah, the Austin Matthews anytime goal, that's the way to go for this one tonight.
Guy, he's only -3,000 to finish as the leading scorer in the NHL.
You know, guys, I've been saying it on the air. It was interesting. Yesterday or two nights ago, I was on with Wes, and I was saying Austin Matthews for the Hart Trophy, the NHL's MVP award. 2 days ago, going into the day, he was at -$7. He was +700. After he scored his 49th goal on President's Day, he dropped to +500. Still think there's a lot of value there. If he can get to 70-plus goals, for me, he is the Hart Trophy winner.
Yeah, it's fascinating you bring that up, because now he's hitting +450. That 50-goal mark, I mean, it's inevitable. He's going to get there. And you say the odds on potentially even getting out to like a 70 here. He's behind Nathan MacKinnon, who's +175, Nikita Kucherov +240, and Connor McDavid +320. You know, all guys who've had really strong seasons. But you know, isn't it weird that I kind of think first, like, with the way Edmonton's come on back half of the year, I would almost think McDavid would be the one guy you'd have to worry about if you were holding a Matthews ticket. Is it fair to say that with how the other guys are here, top of those odds boards?
I think McKinnon's the guy, but if you score 70 goals in the NHL, it's hard not to make that guy the MVP.
That's a very fair way of looking at it here. Jonathan Davis joining us for the rest of the card. And it's a short card tonight, only 5 games as well. Anything else you're looking at here to attack now that lines are out and starting to move?
Yeah, the only other one, I mean, I would look at the under in Philadelphia-Chicago, guys. These are two teams that play to the under. Chicago, 29 of their 51 games have gone under with a couple of pushes. Philadelphia, 30-24 to the under with a couple of pushes. So I like that one now. You know, DraftKings, I think, has it at 6. There are shop around. There are some 6.5s out there as well. I mean, the Flyers are a good road favorite team. They've been favored 5 times on the road. They're 4-1. I just don't like the price now that it's climbed to -230 on the side. I would look at the total going under.
We're looking under there in Flyers and Blackhawks. Also an under 6.5 in Bruins and Oilers. And then look for some Austin Matthews, some anytime goal scoring there with Toronto on the road at Arizona. He's Jonathan Davis. Always a pleasure talking some puck with you, JD. Great to see you as always.
Good to see you guys. Be well. Enjoy. And hopefully I'll see you guys in about a month coming out for Springsteen
and
Vegas Golden Knights hockey.
Let's Springsteen and Vegas Golden Knights. So a great combo for hockey fans coming out to Sid City. Always great to see Jonathan Davis. We have our final segment coming up next on A Numbers Game. Mexico Open Best Bets, College Basketball Best Bets. They're all coming next.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours.
We get tweets. Mr. Lucky.
Yeah.
I almost want to change the wording of his tweets, but he asked very politely, could we get 2 to 3 NCAA baseball futures leans from Ben today or tomorrow? Ben was already cracking up because he knew that the A&G audience was going to be only wanting college baseball stuff.
I think
you.
When you said all the things I do, you know, for my different jobs, I think a lot of people are like, wait, isn't he just in a cave watching college baseball 24/7?
Right, that's exactly.
Kind of what I'm known for here on this show, at least. Yeah, we're going to talk about that tomorrow, actually. I'm excited. Today, we had to get a lot of stuff in here, but tomorrow we'll talk some futures. We're going to get, I think we'll get a college baseball guest as well, either tomorrow or Friday. So don't worry. I appreciate Mr. Lucky remembering that. I was just in Dallas, saw a lot of the top teams in the country.
I was going to say, who stood out to you at that tournament? Because that's one of the premier tournaments to begin the season, right?
I was there. It was for a great cause. It was the Shriners Children's College Showdown in Arlington. It was just at Globe Life Field over the weekend, home of the Rangers. I raised about $300,000 there for Shriners Children's. And Tennessee was the champions of that. They went 2-1. They had kind of an up-and-down weekend, but Tennessee's a really, really good team. The issue is they're 13-1 right now. They're just really, really short. A team that's made the College World Series 2 of the last 3 years and Supers each of the last 3. But Tennessee certainly looked the part. I would say, you know, we'll dive into this a little bit more, but you know, Texas Tech, and this is a very familiar refrain for people who bet college baseball, it's like if they could just figure out the pitching. Well, Texas Tech is a team that has a lot of studs at the plate, and they still found a way to go 2-1 despite scuffling at the plate with a couple of their studs. If pitching comes around for them, and that's a team I was seeing a little bit further down the odds board, they're in that 60-1 range right now to win it all, and even to make the College World Series are big plus money there. That's a team I'm interested in. They open the season just inside the top 25. Big 12 is so good. And the reason I like those teams is they end up battle-tested. They play a really, really tough schedule.
Right.
The pitching, as a result, tends to grow throughout the season, and arms really step up. Because remember, last year I had that opening tournament, and I gave out TCU, I believe, on this show with Gil, and that was, 40-1 at the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, everyone's like, all right, TCU, we're all in. I'm like, oh, boy, getting nervous. And TCU does end up making it to Omaha, and that was a great run for the Horned Frogs. Now they come back, and they're ranked 5th in the country. So you tend to see that happen, teams that are maybe a little bit unheralded because we don't know what happens with the pitching, but they've got the guys who can develop, and that's a really good Texas Tech program in general. So those are the two that really stood out to me from over the weekend.
Random question for you. How much turnover are you getting year to year on college baseball teams?
I mean,
compared
year,
to basketball, yeah, football, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's at, because college baseball, they aren't able to give, you know, they have a certain amount of scholarships. So you have a lot of guys on partial scholarships. You don't have the amount of just insane transfer portal movement.
And then is it the same rules where you can come out right after high school, and then what, you got to go to 2 years to college if you go to college?
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, you have the 2 year rule. So yeah, you've end up with a lot of guys who, I mean, there are transfers. I mean, Tennessee is a team who graduated. You know, they had 4 guys drafted in the top 7, but they brought in 2 really big transfers, one from Clemson, one from NC State. So the view on Tennessee is okay. They just reloaded. They're not having to rebuild. The big teams like that will have a good amount of transfers. It's not overwhelming though. But there are, like in any sport right now, in the current nature of college athletics, a lot of guys in the transfer portal. So that is something you see. And like I had Oklahoma at the tournament. I hadn't had them in a couple of years. And I saved my old, you know, boards and rosters. And Oklahoma barely had anybody from a team that went to the College World Series 2 years ago. So there is a lot of that as you go on with it. We'll have more college baseball talk, though, later on this week. I'll be here tomorrow and Friday. So really excited for that. Thanks for bringing that to my attention, Kelly. We always love it. We also have your Mexico Open bets to get to, though. I don't want to just jump right over that. Even though it's not the sexiest tournament in the world, there's only 6 of the top 60 in the world who are playing.
Yep.
In this event, Kelly, Bombers Paradise is the thought there at Vedanta Vallarta. How did it break out for you as you did your modeling and your breakdown?
Yeah, a lot of, we've seen this tournament's happened for the only 2 years. We've seen Jon Rahm and Tony Finau win it the past 2 years. It's been the short shot on the board. I believe when Jon Rahm won it, he was like 3-1. It was like old school Tiger Woods odds, remember, like from way back in the day. This really is. It's a Bombers course. We talked a bit about it with Sia Nijad. It is look, extremely wide fairways. Looking at it, if you're watching at home right now, 41-yard fairways are very, very wide on the PGA Tour. I think it's the eighth widest that they'll see all year. Distance matters here big time. You get the wide fairways. You don't have that very penal rough. Pass Palom, 1.5 inches on that pass Palom grass. Ball usually tends to sit up. The grass isn't that long, obviously, at 1.5 inches. We'll see up to 3 inches out there on the PGA Tour sometimes on these tough tournaments. So really, you're looking for guys who are longer off the tee, and then this is, you get bigger greens. It's a big time second shot tournament. You got to be able to put it close to the pin, make some putts. Got to go low. You're gonna have to go probably 20 under here to win this tournament this week. So like you talked about, Ben, this is it's a pretty gross field. It has been the past couple years. We're going to be transitioning down to the Florida Swing after this, and we'll get some better tournaments once we get down there. As far as the way that I approach this, we kind of hinted at it, and I want to make sure to get back to your point on Finau and his putting struggles, but it is... Look, every part of Tony Finau's game matches this course perfectly. I think that's part of the reason why Tony Finau's playing here and continues to play here. But you brought it up. And Patrick McDonald with the tweet here, you've been thinking about Tony Finau's putting today because I'm an absolute freak, and here's a nasty nugget. Finau has made
tasty nugget.
There we go. Thank you. Just 37.25% of his putts from 4 to 8 feet this season. 169th out of 170, like you said, Ben. Yeah. So
I was following him, his group, a little bit. I was at Torrey Pines at the Farmers a few weeks
ago. Yeah, you were.
You know, and it really jumps out to you, like the putter. It's kind of like he's got the heel of it on the ground, like I'm kind of trying to show it like this, and the putter head is up.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, visually just looks so weird. And it's obviously, you know, a new look that he's
Stands further away,
yeah,
too.
He's
right?
Committing
That's why
to
it's
that.
Tilted.
But
yeah.
Just naturally, you've got the tilt in it. You're sitting there and you're going, watching him in person, you're like, that just doesn't seem like the optimal. And I'm not, obviously, he knows better than I would.
Right.
Not that I'm going to question his decisions on one of the most important parts of the game here,
yeah.
But it just leaves a little to be desired, and especially when the early results have been so, so bad.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So, look, he's not a guy I'm running to fade. I think that every part of his game, yes, it would not shock me if he won this week. There is no part of me that can get to betting him, though, at plus 850 or even shorter than that, where we're seeing a lot of places for him in the outright market. That does open things up to some of these other guys. I think the one thing I would say, and when we get to my betting card, you'll see it, but this is when we have the whole win equity conversation, right? Uh-huh. Which of these guys can you really trust to go win a tournament? Because there's just not many guys that are up there on the odds board that have a lot of PGA Tour wins under their belt. Now, you know, counter argument to that is, well, they're playing against a bunch of guys that don't have a bunch of wins either. I just think overall for me, when I look at tournaments like this, it's back off the outrights even more than what I normally do. Look to attack in other ways. Look to attack in the top 20s in the matchup markets. So that's where I sunk in most of my money this week. I'm going to start there before I even get to the outrights. Taylor Pendrith, who you only see in the top 20. We talked about it with C. Najat if you were listening earlier. He is my favorite play this week. But to me, Ben, that's load up in the top 20 market. Load up in the top 20 market. I didn't even play an outright. I added it this morning because of C. Najat and Matt Brown. I didn't want to have the FOMO situation when he goes and ends up winning the damn thing when he was the top guy for me this week. But really loaded up on the top 20 market on him, Steven Yeager, Eric Van Rooyen, and Davis Thompson. You always know it's weak fields when the Davises start getting busted out under the betting cards.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the only time of year you even talk about it. But Van Rooyen, real quick, he was, you know, kind of top five model play for me. Recent results, miscut in Phoenix, T20 at Pebble, T25 at Amex, T22 at Century. So has put together some good results so far. Was T33 here last year. Does have some experience. So went outright on him 37-1 and then also a top 20. Steven Yeager, a little bit more of a gut feeling this week. Kind of seeing Najat kind of hinted at it too. I think he's a guy that's really rounding into form on the PGA Tour. I expect him to have a pretty good year here. Up and down results recently, but he does have two top 20 finishes here the past 2 years, though. So rolling with that top 20 again with him and in the outright market. And then, you round out Davis Thompson, also a top 20 on him. He was a guy that really spiked in my models. And I know you got to play.
I went a little bit more field this week. Got to go with the Hoff. Charlie Love Hoffman, it. plus 275, top 20. Not only is he a guy who is excellent on the long approach shots, which you see a lot of this week at Vedanta Vallarta, majority of the approach shots, 200-plus yards out. Hoffman's top 10 in the field in that mark, as well as top 10 in birdie or better. A guy who's in the best form in the last 4 or 5 years of his career. After overcoming some back injuries, Hoffman playing on a one-time exemption this year, so you know motivation is there. Love Charlie Hoffman in a weak field to get into the top 20. Played that at plus 275.
I like that a lot. And then we'll talk about it maybe first thing tomorrow. But first round leader bets, I haven't made any yet. We'll be involved in that market, though. I think there is something to attacking this early window tomorrow.
Boy. Let's go. All right. Big thanks to C. Najad, Dallin Cuff, Jonathan Davis for their time on A Numbers Game today. For the rest of our outstanding crew, Matt Hicks, our technical director. We got Sean Larry also helping us out. For Kelly Bidlin, I'm Ben Wilson saying so long. Best Bets is next.